You're listening to Changing Course. Today we're talking with Daniel Magalow, Associate Professor of German in the Department of Modern Foreign Languages and Literature here on the campus of the University of Tennessee. He will be giving a talk on the topic of using and abusing the memory of the Holocaust. This will take place as part of the Conversations and Cocktail series that's put on by the UT Humanities Center and Holly's Gourmet Market and Cafe. And the talk will take place at Holly's Gourmet Market and Cafe out in Bearden. That will be on Tuesday, March the 21st, from 6 to 7:30. You have to make a reservation. You can do that by calling 865-330-0123 to make a reservation for this talk. Daniel Magalow, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about this talk, Using and Abusing the Memory of the Holocaust. This sounds like a very, very large topic.
Well, it is a large topic. It's a topic that is come into the news a lot recently, I think particularly after the last presidential election. I find people coming to me all the time and they say, hey, you know, you're a professor of German. I mean, you study, you know, World War II and Nazis and the Holocaust and this sort of thing. Yes, I do. And my stock is rising at this point. You know, it's boom times for Holocaust studies, which is kind of strange when you, think that we're now over 70 years after it, but it's still the major measuring stick of moral behavior in the 20th century. So everybody, you know, wants to know how our current political situation stacks up with what was going on in Germany in the late 1920s, early 1930s, and after.
Where do you launch into this talk in terms of making it current?
Well, the way I launch into it to make it current is really what I was just saying. I mean, it's hard to turn on the news recently without hearing references to Hitler and the Holocaust and Nazis and so on and so forth. And Germany is this Germany in the mid 20th century is the master moral paradigm of sorts, you know. And my point of entry into this topic is to ask if what we're seeing today, what we're hearing today in terms of these allusions and these references is anything new. And my claim, I mean, I don't want to give away too much of my talk, of course, but I think that the gist of what I'm saying is that it's not really that new, that that the memory of the Holocaust and the representation of it, and by that I mean its depiction in art, music, literature, film, and so on and so forth, the representation of the Holocaust has long been subject to current events and political currents, you know, the ebb and flow, so to speak. And so what I'm going to be doing is looking at some examples in my talk of some important and well-known Holocaust representations. So, you know, figures like Anne Frank or Elie Wiesel, names that people who aren't experts know. And to talk about how those individuals' stories are tailored in such ways by them and by others to serve certain cultural and social and political agendas.
It seems like any time I get on social media these days that someone uses the Holocaust as like, you're going too far because you're approaching this. I mean, I see it all the time. And it's almost, in a sense, become almost a bit of a cliche.
I mean, it's been totally inflated. I mean, the use of the, absolutely, I see it too. I mean, and
do you ever worry that with more and more Holocaust survivors passing away every day, every week, it'll soon be the point where there are none left, that we won't have these people to come out and say, no, that is not supposed to be used for this political purpose, or not, or you're using it in the wrong way, or you're misrepresenting it. Who are going to be the people that take the place of that?
Well, I think the short answer is intellectual authorities. And by that I mean there are any number of museums or institutions of memory. There's the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. There's Yad Vashem in Jerusalem. There's no shortage of repositories for knowledge about the Holocaust. And, you know, I think that the notion that people will simply forget it I think it's more complicated than that. I mean, I think I don't think we can control memory. I don't think we can control the way that things are remembered. Memory takes its own course. And I think the memory of the Holocaust will change, just as the memory of any number of previous historical traumas has changed. And, you know, it will, there's no way we can predict what those changes will be. But I think the fundamental, the claim that I often hear that people say, well, you know, after all the final living witnesses, whether they were perpetrators or perpetrators or survivors, or bystanders and beneficiaries of these crimes. The idea that once those people are gone, we're going to forget about it seems to me a little ridiculous, because the Holocaust is possibly the most well-researched, well-documented event of the 20th century. The memory will change, but I don't think it's going to go away. And in fact, I sometimes think that this inflation of references, of allusions, of people talking about it, is in its own way a sign of the health of Holocaust discourse. I mean, that's not to say that I wish there were, you know, people making jokes or making memes or social media posts about, genocides in Rwanda or South Sudan or something like that. Of course, I don't wish that. But the fact that those kinds of jokes and memes and the normalization of Holocaust memory is a thing, to me, speaks to the fact that people have remembered it at all. So that's, that's where I'd go with that.
What do you find like the? Do you think that the Holocaust, because it's for most people, it's so unassailable as a example of things going to their logical worst place? Do you think that's why it's such an attractive thing, in a sense, to use for whatever point you're trying to make?
I think that's precisely the reason people make those kinds of comparisons. But it's an interesting comparison because, again, sadly, there are any number of other genocides that are not lacking for viciousness or brutality that could also be cited as examples of, if we let things go in this direction, we'll end up...
Cambodia, Pol Pot.
Cambodia, Rwanda, I mean, you know, the Armenian genocide. I mean, there are too many to list. But what interests me is the fact that this particular genocide, probably because it was because it originated in what at the time was the most modern, most advanced country in the world, or certainly one of them, in Germany. That's why it's taken a particular hold, I think, because of this fear, perhaps, that we are, what do they say? We're nine meals from anarchy or something, that the veneer of civilization, the veneer of civility is so thin that even in a highly advanced, highly modernized country like Germany, they could be responsible. They and their various helpers in Eastern European countries and Western European countries, for that matter, were responsible for this.
Do you find students here in 2017 are more interested in this topic because it's out there more, or does it change over the last 10 years?
I think it's not so much the last 10 years as it is the last 25 years. In Holocaust studies, people sometimes talk about the year 1993 as being the so-called year of the Holocaust. And what they mean by that is that that's the year that Schindler's List came out. That's the year the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum opened to the public. And that's also, that was a year in which there was an important initiative by then Pope John Paul II, an outreach initiative between, an interfaith initiative. And that year has been important in the discipline of Holocaust studies because in many ways after that, the Holocaust really became mainstream. It really became a thing that you can talk about in a kind of open forum and that people have talked about in an open forum. This, I suppose, generally coincides with the age of a lot of my students, maybe a little, they're a little younger perhaps, but I think they've certainly grown up in an age when this is talked about a lot. That doesn't necessarily mean it's talked about in an informed way, but there is actually something very interesting to be said, I think, about the spread of this subject matter to all sorts of platforms, to the internet, to Reddit, to the number of memes and video clips and YouTube's and clips and about Holocaust-related things is really quite remarkable and quite interesting. And of course, to a lot of people, it's quite offensive. But I'm less interested in what is or what isn't offensive, and more in analyzing how it works and why it works. I mean, to give you some examples, when I'm teaching my undergraduate class about Holocaust representations, we spend a few classes talking about Anne Frank, and I show students things like Anne Frank versus the Space Nazis or something? I mean, they're comic books like that. There was some B movie, Anne Frankenstein. I mean, there are all sorts of things that are really, probably to many people very offensive. But there's so much of it out there that it forces students to think about the way that someone like Anne Frank has become a pop cultural icon along the lines of, James Dean or Marilyn Monroe, right? That the Holocaust becomes a commodity, right? It becomes something that's bought and sold and treated in ways that might not be entirely appropriate given what it is or what it was. Those are some of the ways that this material spreads and it makes for it certainly makes for interesting discussions. My students write papers about representations of Anne Frank, they always come up with just crazy, crazy stuff that even sometimes causes my eyebrows, to raise. And I feel like I've seen it all in terms of, a lot of these things. Another thing, I'll show them is, for example, or I'll mention to them is the fact that in North Korea, the Diary of Anne Frank, or it's really the name for it is Anne Frank, The Diary of a Young Girl, that book is taught in such a way that North Koreans identify with Anne Frank and posit the Americans as the Germans. Just as one of the many, many, many examples of the way this memory is directed towards certain political agendas. I mean, that's a pretty explicit one and a pretty obvious one, but it's not unique to North Korea.
So in the future, do you see this continuing, all these different ways of co-opting these icons and these specific historical events?
I do. And indeed, there's an emerging scholarly literature about the phenomenon known as the normalization of the Holocaust, whereby it isn't something that you have to talk about, touch with kid gloves or whatever that metaphor is, right? That people talk about it directly, that, there are websites about cats that look like Hitler, right? And, houses that look like Hitler. I mean, it's pretty incredible, just the sheer volume of stuff, but it speaks toward the normalization of memory, which I think is a process that happens with any number of phenomena. I mean, it's happened with the American Civil War, that there are things that we probably couldn't have said, 100 years ago that we can say today about it. And this, I think, is just the way memory evolves. I mean, there's no way to predict the directions it's going to go in. For all we know, people will get tired of it and stop talking about the Holocaust completely, or it may keep proliferating in the way that it is. I don't think there's any way to know, but there is certainly a normalization of memory that is happening. Many people find that very threatening and worry that there's some core truth that is being eroded through that process. Others are perhaps less worried about it because of the sheer volume of research and writing that's already been done about it. I mean, whenever I hear somebody say, aren't you worried that people are going to forget about the Holocaust? I'm really not. Because there is so much memory that has been generated, so much institutional memory. I mean, when I'm talking to my students about the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., one of the first things we talk about is where it's located. And it's located right at the center of Washington, D.C. It's right at the Washington Mall, the National Mall in Washington, right next to the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Memorial. And, you know, to say that this memory it might be forgotten seems to ignore the fact that it is now literally, architecturally, at the very center of the American consciousness in our nation's capital.
Daniel Magalow, thanks for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me on, Todd. Appreciate it.
Associate Professor of German, Daniel Magalow, who will be speaking as part of the Conversations and Cocktails at Holly's Gourmet Market and Cafe on Kingston Pike here in Knoxville. The event will be from 6 until 7:30 on Tuesday, March the 21st. Reservations are necessary to attend this event. The number is 865-330-0123. Seating is limited. For Changing Course and WUOT, I'm Todd Steed.